when five police officers tackled an innocent man. Their supervisor decided not to make any record of it.
We all figure there's going to be a lawsuit.
Now Milwaukee taxpayers are on the hook.
We just wanted something fair.
For one bad night.
The offer was there. It was never rescinded. We accepted it. And that's the way things work in this world.
Fox 6 Studios, this is Open Record. I'm your host, Brian Polson, and I'm joined by Open Record's executive producer, Sarah Smith. Hi, Sarah.
Hi.
And, of course, Contact 6's Jenna Sachs. Hey, Jenna.
Hi there.
So we are recording this episode on Wednesday, October 11th, for release on Thursday, October 12th. And any day now, the city of Milwaukee should be delivering a six-figure check to a man named Michael Poe. It's a payment that's been approved by the Common Council and signed by the mayor, so should be arriving any day. This is a taxpayer-funded payout that likely never would have happened if a police supervisor had simply done a little paperwork. Jenna and Sarah, this is the result of a story we did last year. It's gotten a lot of attention online. I saw that the original story has like 2.6 million views.
When I saw that in your in one of your scripts, and I went, oh my gosh, I guess I just hadn't looked at it lately to see how many it had
You never
garnered.
Know what stories are going to resonate. Right, for whatever reason, this one really resonated. Mm-hmm.
Well, can you explain to us why that story resonated? What happened that got so much attention?
This was such an interesting one. Our former investigative producer, Stephen Davis, actually got a tip on this from Michael Poe. This man who is a businessman in the city of Milwaukee. He and his friends, they are all black professionals, and they started a private cigar lounge. They just sort of opened this private lounge. It's not open to the public, but it's a really nice, they've got great, leather furniture and this sort of mahogany look in the place. It's a cool hangout. And they were hanging out there one day, smoking cigars. It's a cigar bar and or lounge, but they're watching basketball, watching the Milwaukee Bucks. And this is back in the heat of the Bucks, mm-hmm. championship run. And they're having a good time. And all of a sudden, out of nowhere, bang, they hear a loud noise and they think the ceiling fan blew because they mm-hmm. see dust coming from that area. And all of a sudden, one of their friends yells out, "I've been shot." And he is just, they say blood is gushing from his leg. And there's only three of them in the lounge at the time. So one of them goes and grabs his keys, and the other one grabs a sweater and starts to make a tourniquet, and they load him up into the car and they rush him off to the hospital. They lock up the lounge behind them because nobody's left, and they go to the hospital. And what ends up happening over the next few hours is what leads to our story and leads Michael Poe to reach out. But when he first called us, he says, "I end up at the hospital. I'm there to just try to save my friend's life." Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden the cops turn on me thinking I did this, and things kind of went bad from there. There's video of that. A citizen bystander gets video of what happened. And what's interesting is Michael Poe came to us not right after this happened. He came to us many months later. In fact, I think it was almost a year later that he first mm-hmm. came to us. It was because of the police report that he ultimately received. He had requested, "I want to see the reports from that night." And when he gets the police report, what happened and what was captured on camera by the citizen bystander was completely left out of those reports. And he thought, why are they covering this up? I wanted to see what they would write about what happened and why they did what they did and their interpretation of things. And he said, the fact that they've just kind of whitewashed this, that's why I'm coming to you. And he came here to Fox 6.
Well, do we want to talk about why it got elevated, yeah. why the increased stress level in there?
Well, and this was it was a hard story to put together, but one of my favorites because we had all of the elements. When you hear about a thing that's happened, a shooting that's mm-hmm. happened, often you're hearing people's recollections, and maybe there's a piece of Ring video, maybe mm-hmm. there's body camera of police arriving after the fact. We had everything except for the gunshot itself. But we had a video that came from police squad car and body cameras that showed what was happening at the hospital. When they arrived at the hospital, police were there almost immediately. And so you get the friends arriving at the hospital, the guys wheeled back into the emergency room, and the officers are immediately asking, okay, what happened here? And Michael Poe and his other friend, explain this gunshot that comes from the ceiling. They look up, they see there's a hole in the ceiling. Their friend's been shot. Immediately officers say, okay, let's separate the two of you so we can get more mm-hmm. details. That's protocol. You mm-hmm. separate the witnesses. Yeah. But Michael Poe did one additional thing. He says, hey, I just want you to know I carry a gun. I was always told in my concealed carry classes I'm supposed to say that. And the officer says, okay, thank you. Yeah, that's right. Nothing wrong with that. And so she takes the gun off of his waist and then, you know, takes that into sort of inventory or whatever. And it's one key piece here is it's not in a holster. He's just sort of carrying it in his waistband. And she says, you should have a holster. Always carry a gun in a holster. A little more suspicious to just carry it around in your waistband. But he's announced the gun. They take the gun. And then they separate the witnesses. And while they're talking to them, everything seems to be pretty cordial. The other videos we have show the officers who were sent to the lounge where the shooting happened. And there's no one there. So they bust in the front door. And they go in and they search around. They find no one there. And they look up. And sure enough, just like the witnesses said, there's a hole in the ceiling. And so it's matching the stories that people are telling back at the hospital. Everything seems fine. And one of the officers even says, I don't think this is going to be too hard for them to solve. But then something happens that changes everything. Another man shows up at a different hospital with a gunshot wound and initially lies about what happened, says it was a drive-by type situation. But eventually the detectives they're suspicious. The people at the hospital, they don't think this is adding up. And they eventually find out that he was actually in the apartment above the lounge and shot himself. And that bullet went through the floor and strikes the man in the lounge. They radio that information in. And the officers at the other hospital hear over the radio that there's a second gunshot victim from the same location. They don't realize it matches the story. They think this changes the story.
Got it.
So now there's a second shooting victim and this Michael Poe guy who brought a gun to the hospital. Maybe he's not on the up and up. And immediately everything changes. You see on the citizen video that is shot in the lobby of the hospital that their demeanor changes. They stiffen up. They stand in front of Michael Poe, who is seated, who's been answering questions calmly and pleasantly for an hour. And they say, we need you to go to the back of a squad car with us. And you know, there's a reasonable suspicion that a crime has been committed. And he says, whoa, me? And they say, yes. And that's when things start to escalate. Michael Poe clearly then gets agitated and upset. And he says, I'm not going. He refuses to go to the back of this squad car. They say, if you don't do it, you're going in handcuffs. He says, I'm not going to go. And then things escalate as five officers surround him. He raises his voice. He's yelling. They lift him up from the seat. There's some dispute among the officers as to whether he was lifted up or stood up on his own power. But then it's very clear they all collapse onto the ground. And the officers later testified, we took him down to the ground. So it's a use of force. Not long after all that happens, police realize the error they've made. This guy was not responsible. He'd been telling the truth all along. We got the full story from the other hospital. Sorry. And in fact, here's your gun back. You didn't do anything wrong. Again, Michael Poe did not react that night. He did not seek the media out the moment this happened. He didn't even file a complaint with police. He filed a request for the records. And it's when the records come out and there's nothing in that report about what happened, he says, now I think they did something wrong. Now I think maybe they're covering something up. And that's when he came to the investigators.
So your story aired. It got a lot of attention online. The lawsuit followed your story?
Yeah. So we interviewed for the story. One of the things we did is we interviewed a former Milwaukee police detective to get sort of a law enforcement view of what happened here. And that detective said, based on the circumstances, the officers involved had reason at that moment to suspect that there might have been something up. They didn't have all the information, and it's their job to secure this witness until they know more. There were some issues with the way that was communicated. He said they could have done a better job with that, but he felt that was fine. We also interviewed a civil rights attorney, James Gendy, who we've interviewed on a number of cases over the years, and he offered some expert opinion. He said there was no reasonable suspicion or probable cause that Michael Poe had done anything wrong. So he got involved by us interviewing him for the story. He then looked at the case and said, there's a case here. So 4 months later, James Gendy, on behalf of Michael Poe, filed a lawsuit against the city of Milwaukee and Milwaukee police.
Well, and then part of that lawsuit then involved depositions with the officers, their supervisor. Some of the stuff that came out of that, again, just like separating witnesses, they do each of these separately, and so they can get their own account. So what did we find in those?
It was really interesting to watch them because you've got five police officers that were ultimately involved in the we call it a takedown, the use of force to take Michael Poe to the ground and take him into custody. And then a supervisor who was on the scene. He was not involved in the physical confrontation, but he's the official person who sort of oversees what's going on. And what we found out from the depositions was the Chance Bamba is the sergeant's name. He was nearing retirement at the time, 25 years of service already when this happened. He's there that night. He hears of the second shooting victim, and he tells the officers who are watching Michael Poe, yeah, I know he's been calm and cooperative, but it would be better to interview him in the back of a squad car. That's protocol when detectives arrive. It should be, shouldn't be in a hospital lobby in front of everybody. That's a working hospital. Let's get him back to the squad car. He says it was a request. It was, as he put it, a simple ask. The officers, each when interviewed, said this was an order from a supervisor. My supervisor ordered me to put him in the back of a squad car, so I'm just following orders. And that, call it a miscommunication, Michael Poe calls it that, his attorney calls it that. If that's a miscommunication, if that's in fact what went down, the officers are thinking, well, we've been ordered to do this, so we're going to do what we've been ordered to do, and you either comply or we're going to force you into the back of a squad car. While that's the optimal situation, James Gendy, the attorney, would say, look, he was answering all of your questions calmly. You didn't bother to check his gun and even see if it had been fired. If you had, you'd see it had never been fired that night. There was no evidence of it being fired. So there was no reason to suspect him. That's his view of it. Again, the officers are saying, look, we were just following orders. It's what our boss told us to do. The other thing that comes from those depositions, though, is, okay, then why didn't you just write up a report about this? Hey, this is what happened. They thought it was an order. It wasn't. Here's why. And at the point that he became verbally resistive, we feel we have cause to physically take him into custody. This is our protocol. You know, this is the use of force that happened, and here's why we did it. In fact, some of the officers who were interviewed in these depositions, and this wasn't in the story we put on the air, they believe Michael Poe still should have been cited or arrested for resisting arrest. Because at the point that he became physically resistive to being handcuffed, they say that's a crime. He should not have been, or at least a citation, he should have been cited with the resisting. The supervisor, they felt, wanted to smooth things over because he clearly wasn't involved in the shooting, because he had now been sort of treated as a suspect. He felt like, I'm not going to write a ticket, but I'm also not going to write up a use of force report. And we can just kind of make this thing go away. That's sort of the impression that James Gendy, the attorney, ultimately has, is they just wanted this to go away. You can't do that. You can choose not to write a ticket. You can choose not to make an arrest. You can't choose not to file a use of force report when force has been used. And several of the officers testified in these depositions that they, of course, believe force was used against Michael Poe.
So the sergeant is retired.
He is, yeah. He has since that incident, right.
So did he kind of see this coming? Is that part of his reasoning? I believe he said something along the lines of, well, I'll change it if it comes up, if he contacts us.
This came up in the internal affairs investigation. So police launched an internal affairs investigation of their own after seeing our story. Obviously, there had been no use of force report filed, so they didn't know there was any use of force that hadn't been reported. Our story brings that out, so they opened an internal investigation. One of the things they found out was that Sergeant Bamba had been known for making, I guess you'd call them, jokes around the office that, I'm going to be retired soon, I'm not writing any reports. What are they going to do, haul me in after my retirement? And he was asked about that in the depositions. You know, did you not file this use of force report because who cares? I'm going to be retiring. And he said, it's true that I made those jokes. I was known to make those. He said, but if you look, I also always did my paperwork. And his assertion here was he didn't do the use of force report because he felt force was not used. He felt Michael Poe stood up on his own power and tripped and fell, and that this wasn't a use of force. Again, when you talk to the officers that were interviewed are not very experienced. They've got maybe 4 years on the force, each of them. They all said this was a decentralization. This was a push and pull technique to sort of get him off balance and take him down to the ground and bring him under control. Chance Bamba should know that. He taught defense and arrest tactics, but he said it was, in his view, not a use of force, so he didn't think it was necessary to do a report. He added something, though, that seems to maybe foretell why he didn't, which was he said he talked to his supervisor about what happened, and the supervisor said, well, has he complained? And if he complains, you can file a use of force report then. That's not really how this works. You're required to file it no matter what. A supervisor is required to file that report of force with you. So it's not a, if they complain, we'll file one. But that's what he testified to. He said, I felt if he came and complained, then I could file a report then. Well, by the time Michael Poe complained, there was a federal civil rights lawsuit.
Do we think, and maybe you don't know this answer, but obviously there's body camera, which we saw. But obviously that citizen in the hospital room or in the hospital lobby waiting room there has the wide shot, all the video of it. Do we think that there might still be this case and this lawsuit had we not had that extra video?
No, I think had it not been for the citizen pulling out a cell phone and recording this, this never would have been a news mm-hmm. story because we wouldn't have been able to independently see what Michael Poe was describing.
Yeah.
The contrast between what you see, not only what you see on the camera with the takedown, but the discussion that took place beforehand,
yeah.
I think that was what really sold the fact that these two witnesses, these two friends, independent of one another, told the exact same story, and it matched the video of the police going into the lounge and finding the bullet hole in the ceiling. So it's clear they were being honest the entire time, and then you see what happens. The question that I think I had from the beginning, and it's, I think, one that Michael Poe is still playing over in his own head, was he says he's never been arrested before, and we found no evidence that he had any arrest record or conviction record. He's this business professional who's got this lounge. Why not just go to the squad car? And I think that's a lot of people look at this. Mm-hmm. Why not just go to the squad car? Maybe you're not required to, but why not just make this easier? And he said, and this was in the initial story, that remember, this was all happening not long after all of the George Floyd protests. And he said, you know, as a black man in America, he said, I have a great relationship with police. I have friends who are retired police officers who were members of the lounge. Mm-hmm. But he said, that's the moment where I thought, I'm being accused of something I didn't do. And this doesn't, going to the back of a squad car, as he put it, doesn't often go well for people who look like me. And he said, I never knew how I would react in a moment like that. I'm the person who would tell people, don't ever behave that way. Mm-hmm. But he said, in that moment, he felt the injustice. And that was why he reacted the way he did. In the end, he said he wasn't looking for some big payout. He didn't go to the hospital with serious injuries. This wasn't a case where he's dealing with a lifelong, you know, shoulder problem mm-hmm. or something like that. But he did feel there was a wrong that was done here, and particularly what he felt was a cover-up. And he wanted to make sure the public knew about that because he doesn't want to see that happen to other people in that situation.
So speaking of that payout, this was headed toward a jury trial, right? When
it was,
his attorney, Poe's attorney, accepted an earlier offer?
Yeah, so the city at some point early in the process made an offer of $150,000 to settle this case. And whether James Gendy rejected that or simply didn't respond, that offer was apparently still open. And as it got closer and closer to trial, you know, he's got all of these depositions. They're not far away from actually going to trial. And then he contacts the assistant city attorney who's on the case that had changed hands. And he says, we're ready to accept. City Attorney Tierman Spencer, the Milwaukee city attorney, wrote a letter to the Milwaukee Common Council because that has to be approved. They still have to vote on it. They have to approve it. The mayor has to sign it. And in a letter to the Common Council explaining his recommendation that they settle for $150,000, he added something at the end that James Gendy took as sort of an unnecessary shot at Michael Poe. And that was to say, or at he himself, which is mm-hmm. to say that they agreed to the settlement. The Gendy and Poe agreed to the settlement the day after the city attorney's office had just successfully defended Milwaukee police mm-hmm. in another federal case. And I was able to find that case was English versus the city of Milwaukee, which dates back to the shooting of Saville Smith by Milwaukee mm-hmm. police. There were some protests after that, some people who were arrested in connection with that. The city successfully defended police in that case. And the next day, James Gendy is saying, we'll settle this one. We'll accept the offer. The city attorney seems to be suggesting he was scared to go to court. He was scared to go to trial. One of the aldermen, Michael Murphy, who's on the committee that had to approve this payment, said, well, then if that's really how you feel, why are you settling? Mm-hmm. Go to trial. Say, we don't need to settle with you. We're going to win this case. And a deputy city attorney, Jennifer Williams, said, well, they accepted it. It was still on the table. Before I could withdraw, which suggests she actually planned to withdraw this offer, he accepted. So kind of have to go with it now. I think there was some question about whether that was still going to go forward. It did. The mayor has signed it. The payment's going to be going out to Michael Poe. So taxpayers are on the hook for $150,000, which, ironically enough, I looked this up, happens to be roughly the annual salary of the Milwaukee city attorney.
So how does Michael Poe and his attorney feel about getting this $150,000?
I interviewed Michael Poe afterwards, and he said, yeah, I mean, for him, he's ready to move on. Mm-hmm. He said he thinks it's fair. He wasn't looking for a giant payout. He said, you know, he's ready to move on. And he emphasized a couple of times that he still believes Milwaukee police do a great job. He's a big fan of the city. He's a cheerleader for the city of Milwaukee. And then he said this was just one bad night. And so he does believe they did something wrong that night. He believes this is a fair settlement, but he's ready to move on. He didn't seem to be in the place where he wanted to badmouth police any further. He just wanted to take this money and move on with his life. And that's a good time for us to go off the record. This is the part of the podcast where we get a little more casual and have a little fun by answering a question for which we have not prepared. Somehow it will lead to Brian talking about his air fryers. I don't
likely.
Know.
Likely.
Yeah. So what do you have, Sarah?
Wait, before we get started really quick. So back in the day during COVID times, and we would record Zooms for the podcast, Brian Polson was known to wear a particular shirt.
I still wear that shirt in morning meetings.
Yeah. Is it under that? Is it under that pullover?
No, it's not. Yeah. Did you think it was?
Yeah, it's a baby blue.
It's this color. But
darn
no,
it. I thought no, I was going to, it was going to be this a big reveal. No. It was it's a blue Anytime Fitness shirt,
correct,
right?
Yes. Okay. Yeah. It was shirt. For 1 year, I was a member of Anytime Fitness.
Fine.
And it's that cotton.
Yeah.
Sometimes you have that shirt.
I 100% agree. But it just always seemed like it was on. So then I thought, oh my gosh, does he have it on under that? It would have been great. Okay. Well, that's on me.
That would have seemed too staged anyway. Like,
well,
Brian, make
I don't
sure
know.
You wear that today.
Maybe a wink and a nod. But anyway, okay, today's question. Let's see. What have you realized you like less and less the older you get?
Hmm.
Our editor, Dave Machuda, asked me this, and I immediately was like, people. And no.
You know the sound I hear in my head when I'm thinking, you know, a lot of people will do the Jeopardy one. For me, it goes all the way back. Do you remember the game show Tic-Tac-Doe?
No.
Oh, so there was a boom, all right, I'm going to need an answer. So that's what's in my head
right
like
now. I think 18 seconds, not even. Yeah. I don't know. All I could think about were like late night events.
True.
I like 9 o'clock too late.
Oh, yeah.
You know, like
okay.
Things that start uh-huh. after about 8. It's touch and go. I may or may not go.
That's fair.
You know,
when
you've
got so much going on in the morning, well, it's not worth it sometimes. And you want to get your 7 hours of sleep, maybe.
If I'm lucky.
I mean, I think in the same vein, late night drinking and / hangovers,
yes.
I am not a fan.
No.
I have too much to do the
yeah,
next
that's
day.
What,
I don't
yeah.
have time to feel crappy.
I almost need to plan it. Like, okay, I know that tomorrow we don't have anything going on. I will be able to, but like your kids are grown. Mine are not. And so they still not kind of need to be parented.
Well, you know, the funny thing too is I when I drink beer, I don't drink Bud Light. I like to drink
nice.
Yes.
You know,
craft
good,
beer.
Good craft
yeah.
brews. And the thing is, after you have like even one or two, you go,
sometimes
the calories.
Yeah. Also higher ABVs too. ABVs. Alcohol value. ABVs.
I hate to say it. This is probably sad for me, but I'm more worried about the heaviness than the alcohol.
Okay.
It just feels like it's
that's
too, like, you know, it's a meal late at night. And I don't know how many of these I can have, but I'm not going to go have, you know, sorry to name a brand. I'm not going to have like Michelob Ultra. I'm not having a light, like
well, they won't be sponsoring us
95
anytime soon.
Calorie beer. It's fine beer and all, I'm a craft brew drinker.
Yeah.
So it's, I'm always battling that.
Maybe that's something else you like less and less. Crummy beer.
No, that's true.
Yeah.
That's true. Like, that's funny you say that because I think back to the days of like being in college and we'd go tailgate at Mizzou football games and you're just drinking a high volume
whatever
of crappy
is
beer.
In your hand. Yes.
Yeah.
Natty Light.
I was just going to say, in the course of a tailgate, if I drank a case of Natty Light, it was fine. But today, I wouldn't even want to have one.
Yeah. I feel like I'm going to be in the minority in this one, but I care less and less about the outcome of our local sports teams.
I agree with that. 100%. Yes. I will say, guys, the last Packers game, I stepped downstairs and watched the game twice for 2 minutes.
Yes.
And I saw two interceptions.
Oh,
and
you're done.
My husband was like, you can go.
Yeah.
You're done.
And I don't even say that because, you know, the Packers aren't doing so well right now. But even when, you know, our teams are doing well, I just, okay, great. They won. Awesome.
It doesn't upset you.
It doesn't.
Much.
Yeah. It doesn't have the effect.
Affect your whole day.
I think that's the thing. I think if there was a time in my life where a crushing loss really was crushing, yeah. and it would sit with me.
Yeah.
And now, again, too many other things to do. It's yeah. almost mm-hmm. sometimes a relief. It's almost like, well, yeah. now I don't have to focus on the playoffs
right.
because I've got other
stuff.
They're
not but, happening. Yeah. yeah. Right?
So
the thing that comes to mind for me, I don't really enjoy watching movies mm-hmm. like I used to. Like if I'm watching something, it might be mm-hmm. like a short episode yeah. thing or where I can like carry
especially
a tablet
if it's like a
room.
Christopher Nolan epic and you're like, where am I getting no. 3 hours
like there's some movies that have this. Come out that are just long like
yeah.
I just have no desire or if it's like a serious movie with like a lot of weight to it yeah. I'm just not
you have to really pay attention
you know what ready. They need to bring back in movies intermission
yeah
because so many of these get movies now are these epics next. That are right. 2:45 3 hours whatever mm-hmm. it is the problem with that is there's not a reasonable place to stop that feels like you're not just cutting it off in the middle. Mm-hmm. But an intermission, if it builds, like you think of Gone with the Wind, it was a really, really sure. epic yeah. long movie, but it builds to a crescendo and then there's an intermission. I could come back the next day and watch the second half. But watching things in acts, I guess, would be fine. Hollywood needs to bring that back.
Maybe that's just because our attention spans are getting shorter and shorter. That may have nothing to do with getting older. But it's harder to sit down. Like I'm sure everybody enjoyed Oppenheimer, but I was like, oh, that seems like it's going to be a long movie.
I haven't seen it yet in part because I couldn't find a time where I could dedicate 3 hours to go do that. So, you know, and that's another one. Where would you stop in the middle of that? I doubt there's a natural crescendo. I don't know. So, yeah.
Do you have one, Brian? Did you already say
cheap beer? No,
cheap
I don't
beer.
Know.
What? Mine was drinking at Hangovers. I mean, so it's things you used to like though, right? That you liked less and less.
Well, what you liked Hangovers at one point?
No, no. But I mean, I when I was younger,
you didn't care as much.
I didn't care as much about the effect the next morning, so I was more into like let's party and let it all loose. People bring around. I'll tell you, it's related to this. I'll tell you what it is. I am not a fan of shots. When I was younger, everybody was like, "Oh, let's do shots." And now, when somebody says that, all I think is. That's the most expensive thing that I don't even want it.
And
So shots are not. So yeah, no, I as I'm older, shots don't make any sense. I know that's a big profit maker for the bars. So I don't begrudge them marketing that and having the people go around the shots. But for me, if somebody says, hey, let's get around the shots. I think, no, let's not. How about that? And then, you know, or get one less and I won't drink one.
The other thing, I think
does that make me a buzzkill?
No,
literally.
I think it's fine. Yeah,
Kelly, you still do shots?
No, absolutely not.
Okay,
right. I do think though, like the tolerating thing, in the same vein as beer, like things that are cheap, like cheap coffee. Like I'm not just gonna buy some junk grounds coffee to like I don't know. I'm too old at this point. Like I deserve a good cup of coffee.
You know what?
So I agree with you.
I like generic. Brand, you know, generic things like the not name brand, sorry. but also there's some things where I was like, I will buy brand name of this and I will eat it and because it's delicious.
You know, I'll tell you this, is on that same vein, not to do an advertisement for Costco and Kirkland, but usually the Kirkland brands of things are phenomenal.
They're pretty good. Mm-hmm.
But I got a giant box of Kirkland K-cups and they're just meh. Mm. And I'm starting to realize it's not necessarily the Kirkland's fault or anything. It's just the K-cup concept, which is extremely convenient and I still use them. I think I need to go back to drip coffee and grinding my own beans because that's good coffee.
Yes.
I have not found a K-cup that gives me the same like, wow, that was a really
K-cup
great cup
to
of
me
coffee.
Always is kind of like the meh.
It's like, the it doesn't fast matter. Food of coffee.
It can be any name brand K-cup. I just feel like the K-cup to me, it almost feels like instant coffee kind of. I know
it's very similar. Yeah. And you know how I what was I drinking? I had a cup of coffee the other day that I had put in a like container from home. And then I brought it here and I poured it into a coffee mug. And then I went to take a sip and it tasted like that sort of like Sanka almost sort of,
yeah.
or, you know, like the cafe, the diner coffee or something.
Yeah.
And I was so disappointed and I thought, well, this is what I've been drinking in that container all along. So I think I need to go back to drip coffee. Maybe that's it.
Or if you want some fast, fancy coffee, get an espresso.
I have an espresso. It's wonderful.
It's great.
It's
expensive, though.
I was going to say, isn't espresso extremely high caffeine?
It's not all espresso. The thing is, you can get, you know, caffeine. A full cup of coffee, a medium, and then they do the different espresso shots.
You're talking about an espresso maker.
Yeah. It's called Nespresso.
Nespresso.
But you get a smaller cup.
It's like K-cup.
So, you like, if you like having a big cup of coffee.
Nespresso. It felt like I all of a sudden.
I feel like between Mick Ultra, yeah. Sanka, you know what? Costco.
We should get sponsors, but do it as an off the record. Like we're yeah. just slipping it in gorilla yeah. style. And this is like suddenly a big. And we
every morning, I love drinking.
We've got Kosori air fryers. And they have a sponsorship you know, there.
I'm telling you.
Yeah, you got to do it Wayne's World style.
I can't remember.
Remember when he's got like the bag of chips and he's like, he's got the Doritos and he's holding them up.
We'll work on that.
See, we could make some money doing this. That'd be pretty nice. I'll bet our general manager would like that idea. If you have a topic you would like us to discuss on Open Record or an issue you think we should investigate for Fox 6 News, send us an email to fox6investigators@fox.com. Sarah, Jenna, thank you as always for being on the podcast.
You're welcome.
And thank you to the people who make this podcast possible, including our editor, Dave Machuda, and our chief photographer, manning the video switcher, Kale Zimney. With that, I'm Brian Polson. We'll be back next week.